that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
Good Friday morning. The world now reacting to the passing of O.J. Simpson.
And putting renewed attention on a case that captivated the world. It is April 12th. This is today. Breaking news, reaction pouring in overnight to the death of O.J. Simpson. Famous in football and Hollywood, then infamous, accused and acquitted of the vicious double murder of his ex-wife and her friend.
A statewide manhunt underway for O.J. Simpson.
Just ahead, we look back at the case that captivated the country, from the notorious Bronco chase to the trial of the century watched by tens of millions.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
And the verdict that divides to this day.
The not guilty of the crime of murder.
This morning, the fascination the case still holds 30 years later, with key figures speaking out this morning. Danger zone. Millions in the Northeast hit by those powerful storms that have raced across the country and spawned new tornadoes in the South.
It's coming our way.
Heavy rain leading to widespread flooding and power outages up and down the East Coast. Al's got the full forecast for today and the weekend. On edge, new reports that Israel is bracing for an imminent and direct attack from Iran. The U.S. now sending a top general to the region and issuing warnings to Americans in Jerusalem. We'll have the very latest in a live report. Set to surrender, stunning new details on the scandal that's rocked baseball. Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter expected in court today to face federal charges. Just ahead, how he allegedly stole millions from the Dodgers superstar. All that plus sticker shock.
Like a minimum of $30 for two people to eat.
New frustrations over skyrocketing food prices, especially when it comes to fast food. Are they here to stay? And help wanted. Three castaways stranded on a remote island use leaves to spell out a desperate plea, and it worked. Inside their remarkable rescue today, Friday, April 12, 2024.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Today, Friday morning. Nice to have you along with us. Hoda, welcome back.
Nice to be back. We got a lot of news to cover this morning. We're starting with the death of O.J. Simpson, one of the most controversial public figures ever.
He was a towering figure in the history of football, but the legacy will forever be overshadowed by the brutal crime he was accused of committing, a trial that was watched by the world, and the acquittal that divided this nation. NBC's senior national correspondent Kate Snow begins our coverage with a look at Simpson's complex legacy and how people are reacting to his death this morning. Kate, good morning to you.
Good morning, Savannah. The news was announced by his family in a brief statement on his X account. O.J. Simpson dying of cancer at age 76, surrounded by family and friends, they said. His death bringing up a wave of emotions from the relatives of those murdered, as well as the millions of Americans who tuned in to watch the trial of the century.
The news of O.J. Simpson's death brought a wide spectrum of reaction, as mixed and controversial as his life.
Is this your verdict?
Ron Goldman was murdered alongside Simpson's ex-wife, Nicole Brown, back in 1994. From Ron's sister, Kim, and father, Fred, this statement. The news of Ron's killer passing away is a mixed bag of complicated emotions. For three decades, we tirelessly pursued justice for Ron and Nicole, and despite a civil judgment, the hope for true accountability has ended. From Kate O'Kalin, OJ's famous house guest at the time of the murders.
To Fred and to Kim, I hope you find closure. And finally, to the family of the beautiful Nicole Brown Simpson, may we always cherish her memories.
Marcia Clark, the lead prosecutor in Simpson's murder trial, telling us simply, I send my condolences to Mr. Simpson's family. Carl Douglas was one of Simpson's criminal defense attorneys.
Certainly the early part of his career is marked by great milestones. And regrettably, his legacy devolved in his later years.
As a young athlete, O.J. Simpson was a once-in-a-generation talent, winning the Heisman Trophy at USC before becoming the first running back in NFL history to join the mythical 2,000-yard club in just 14 games for the Buffalo Bills. He was later inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, his charisma making him a beloved TV personality, first in commercials and later on the big screen.
One of the greatest athletes we've ever seen, but all of that tainted forever and smeared by charges of being a double murderer.
Once revered, then reviled, that image of the white Bronco slowly traversing the 405 in Los Angeles is something anyone alive at the time will never forget.
And we are told by the California Highway Patrol that O.J. Simpson is in that car holding a gun to his head.
His criminal case, known as the trial of the century.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Lasted 11 months and for many was must-see TV. The murders also revealing allegations that Simpson had abused Brown. According to the AP, Brown wrote a letter alleging Simpson, quote, beat the holy hell out of her. 911 calls also emerging during the trial. Simpson pleaded no contest to spousal abuse charges in 1989, but has since denied the abuse. When Simpson was acquitted,
not guilty of the crime of murder,
the verdict exposed the racial divide in this country. But the Goldman and Brown families filed a civil suit in 1997 and won. Simpson was ordered to pay them $33.5 million, but only paid a fraction. In 2008, a Las Vegas jury found him guilty of armed robbery and kidnapping, Simpson claiming he was simply trying to recover stolen sports memorabilia. He served 9 years in prison before his release in 2017. After that, Simpson kept a low profile. Reports circulated in February that Simpson had been diagnosed with prostate cancer. In a video posted on X, he denied he'd been in hospice care.
Hospice? Hospice? You talking about hospice?
As recently as February, continuing to insist his health was good. Thursday, his family announcing he succumbed to his battle with cancer.
In their statement, Simpson's family asked people to respect their wishes for privacy and grace. OJ himself never mentioned that he was battling cancer. And by the way, a family attorney for the Goldmans has said the debt that Simpson owed to them has ballooned to over $100 million now with interest, and that Simpson died, quote, without penance. Mm. Kate, thank you. We're joined now by Bob Costas, a legendary sports broadcaster who knew O.J. personally, worked with him for years at NBC Sports. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Yeah, Bob, you have a unique perspective, which is why we'd love to have you on this morning. You guys were friends back then. Just your reaction to his passing.
Well, it's a complicated legacy, to put it mildly. I can't think of anyone historical or someone that we may have known where the first chapter and the second chapter of their lives are such a stark contrast. As Kate's piece said, revered and then reviled. Yes, I knew him well. All of us at NBC Sports and throughout NBC who interacted with him liked him very much. What I'm about to say doesn't mitigate the crime that he quite obviously committed. But at the time, he was the sort of guy who would remember the name of the kid who brought you the newspapers and coffee when you first got to the set in the morning on Sunday to cover football. He was accommodating to every fan who came up to him. He enjoyed his celebrity. He was very good company. He was a hail fellow, well met. And then all of that, in our perception and in public perception, changed one night in June of 1994.
Well, let's just underscore that, because you have very interesting anecdotes that I hope we'll get to, but let's just underscore what you said, because there are two victims here, Ron Goldman, Nicole Brown Simpson. You yourself believe that OJ, as you just said, without a doubt committed this killing.
Yes. We can hold multiple truths in our head at the same time, even if some of those truths at the time confused people who were inclined to view it through an emotional prism rather than a rational prism. It is simultaneously true that there's a long history of injustice by the justice system toward African Americans. And that continued well into the 1990s and to some extent continues today. And the Simpson situation was not long after the Rodney King situation with the beating caught on camera. And then those officers were acquitted. And there was a lot of tension, to put it mildly, between the African-American community and the LAPD. All those things are true. It's also true that Mark Furman was a racist and lied about it, and then it was revealed that he used the N-word. It was also true, as a very skillful defense team was able to present, that some of the chain of custody on the evidence was mishandled. There were mistakes there. All those things can simultaneously be true, and it's also true that it's impossible to even postulate that anyone other than O.J. Simpson committed these crimes. The evidence, both circumstantial and hard evidence, is overwhelming, and there is no other explanation.
The trial, as you mentioned, came to represent many aspects of our culture, of our justice system. You did have a unique vantage point. I think sitting here today, we can all say exactly where we were during that white Bronco chase. And in your case, Bob, we all know where you were because you were broadcasting the NBA Finals and that split screen moment. What are your memories of that?
Well, NBC was in a unique position. Every other network, every cable entity went live and carried it for hours upon hours. But we had not just a basketball game, an NBA Finals game involving the number one market in the country, not incidentally, the New York Knicks against the Houston Rockets. The series was tied 2-2. Game five was a close game. And so Dick Ebersol of NBC Sports and the people at NBC News had to make a decision. And throughout that evening, Marv Albert was calling the game. Sometimes he'd throw it to me. I would then transition to Tom Brokaw, who was at 30 Rock. He would summarize the situation, which he called a Shakespearean tragedy, and it certainly fit that description. And then I'd send it back to Marv Albert. And other times, we'd split the screen. So Ewing and Elijah Wan would be going at it at Madison Square Garden, and the Bronco would be making its way slowly down the 405 on the other side of the screen. It was surreal, to put it mildly.
And, you know, O.J., it's known now, was trying to call you during that Bronco chase. You never did get the phone call, but you were able to visit him in prison. He asked for you to come to prison. And you had a kind of a strange interaction when you were in prison. Will you tell us that?
Yeah, at his request, I visited him in November of 1994, before the trial started. As it happened, Robert Kardashian picked me up at the hotel, drove me to the L.A. County Jail. Al Cowlings, who was his Buffalo Bills teammate and was driving the Bronco that day, he was also there. So it's the three of us, and it's kind of an awkward conversation that you're having. Some of it's small talk and whatnot. And a good part of O.J.'s personality, the kind of jocular part, remained. He was kind of, you know, trying to pick up where our relationship had left off, the kind of jabs that you'd offer each other in kind of a sports surrounding. And then almost out of nowhere, Al Cowling says, we tried to call you from the back of the Bronco. And I later learned that, in fact, they called the control room at the studio. But since I was at Madison Square Garden, in fact, no one was there. The whole crew wasn't there. But a tech answered the phone eventually. And O.J. said, I need to speak to Bob Costas. And the tech didn't believe him. Yeah, right. Who's calling O.J. Simpson? Yeah, right. Click. Hung up the phone. And so I asked O.J., what would make you think in that moment that you'd want to speak with me? And he said I was being defamed by the media. Not so much about the allegations, which were then fresh, about the allegations of the crime, but that his overall character and the life he had led was being defamed. And somehow he thought that someone who was his friend as well as his colleague could perhaps, in effect, act as a character witness. And what I didn't bother to tell him, since it was a moot point, was that if he had gotten through to me and if he had agreed to go on the air, then I would have had to ask him some very pointed questions.
And Bob, just what Hoda was alluding to also, you had a moment where you sort of shook hands.
Oh, yeah. Well, they brought him out. He came around a corner flanked by two guards. It looked to me like he'd lost about 20 pounds. He was wearing a blue prison jumpsuit, and he was shackled at both wrists and both ankles. And then when he sat down on the chair on the other side of the glass, they removed three of them and put one of the shackles on one of the legs of the chair. And there was a glass partition between us. And so the way you shake hands is that you put your hand up and match it with his. And apart from that, there's a story which he disputes, but it did happen. I think this is what you're alluding to. I, as it happened, coincidentally, had cut my hand. I stuck my hand in a dop kit and a razor blade, small cut, and I just had a bandage on it. And when I put it up there and he saw the bandage and a little drop of blood, he said, wait a minute, you did it. I didn't, you know, there's a million things to feel bad about. I just thought in that moment it was an attempt in an awkward situation to lighten the mood, if that was possible. I didn't read anything more into it than that, but it was a little weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bob, you have a unique perspective on these events, and it's so good to catch up with you and hear from you on this moment. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. And in our next half hour, we're going to revisit the Simpson trial, both how it riveted and then divided the nation and its impact still going 3 decades later.
All right. But right now, we're going to turn to that severe weather overnight. The storms that have punished the country all week, ripping through the Northeast, heavy rain, strong winds after causing even more damage all across the South. That severe weather triggering flash flooding in several states, including western Pennsylvania, where torrential rain swamped roads that left some towns under several feet of water. Let's bring in Mr. Roker, get a check of all that. Hey, Al.
Hey, guys. Good morning. This system has triggered 4 flash flood emergencies. That's really kind of unheard of, but in this short period of time. You can see this system now getting ready to move off. We do have some flash flood watches. It lifts up north into Canada. Windy conditions, rainy conditions, snow wrapping around this. It's going to be blustery and cooler behind the system, with some areas picking up 1 to 2 inches of rain, but melting snow could enhance flooding. We've got wind advisories for 36 million people from the Great Lakes all the way down to the Appalachians. We're looking at wind gusts of anywhere from 30 to 50 miles per hour from Boston out to Chicago, down to Asheville. So there may be some airport delays. And we're watching this next system. This is going to be a big weather impact, coast-to-coast system. We're going to look at that coming up in the next half hour. Guys?
All right, Al, thank you. We got Craig with another big story we're following.
Yeah, hello to Savannah. Good morning. Good morning to you as well. In the Middle East, tensions remain high this morning between Israel and Iran, with fears that fallout over the war in Gaza could soon spill over into the rest of the region. NBC's Hala Gharani joins us from Tel Aviv now. Hala, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig. Well, almost 2 weeks since that embassy attack in Damascus on the Iranian embassy compound, we are still bracing for a response by Tehran.
New warnings for Americans in Israel this morning. The State Department telling U.S. embassy employees and their families to restrict their personal travel between 3 major cities. As Israel braces for a possible attack from Iran, that has U.S. intelligence officials concerned. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also speaking out Thursday, saying, in the midst of the war in Gaza, quote, his country was also prepared for scenarios involving challenges in other sectors. The fears of fallout coming after that attack on Iran's embassy compound in Damascus, widely attributed to Israel. Iran's supreme leader saying this week, an attack on his country's diplomatic missions is comparable to an assault on Iran itself. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said, the wicked regime made a mistake in this case. It must be punished, and it will be punished. The U.S. has been signaling its support to Israel despite recent criticism of the war in Gaza. A top American general traveling there, as concern rises of a wider conflict involving Iran and its proxies. In the U.S., intelligence agencies are keeping a close eye on whether developments in the Middle East could be cause for worry domestically.
Our most immediate concern has been that individuals or small groups will draw some kind of twisted inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks here at home.
While back in Israel, the defense minister has warned of, quote, an appropriate response if Iran attacks Israeli territory.
Well, the UK foreign secretary called his Iranian counterpart urging restraint as the entire region remains on edge, Craig.
Hala Gharani for us there. Hala, thank you.
All right, I want to check in one more time with Al. What you got?
Hey, guys. So we do have that flood risk in the Northeast and New England. Sunny skies down through the Gulf and Florida. Thank goodness. Windy conditions around the Great Lakes. Going to be beautiful from Texas all the way into the Rockies. Some strong storms starting to move into the Pacific Northwest. And that's your latest weather, guys.
All right, Al. Thank you so much. Coming up, with new attention on O.J. Simpson in the wake of his death, we'll look back at his murder trial and the intrigue and interest that still surround it 30 years later.
Also had this morning, sticker shock at the drive-thru, an inside look at why inflation is hitting the fast food world so severely and what
you can do to save money at your favorite chains. But first, this is Today on NBC.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Back now, 7:30. Look at that.
What is that?
You can see the palm leaves when we pull out, and you will notice that, well, it says help. Written in palm leaves, three sailors stranded on a tiny Pacific island in Micronesia. For more than a week, the U.S. Coast Guard spotted it from the sky. They saw those leaves. They picked them up. The three men had been surviving on coconuts and water from a well, but they were running out of food when they were rescued. In good health, but dehydrated. Wow.
Jeez.
Like something out of the movie.
Yeah.
Way to go, Coast Guard.
Yes.
All right, let's get to it this half hour. We are going to start with more on the death of O.J. Simpson and the trial for the killings of his ex-wife and her friend that came to define him.
Well, at the time, as mentioned, Simpson was a sports legend and a pop culture icon. And for many, his trial became appointment viewing, a unique moment in American history that paved the way for today's true crime obsession.
NBC's Jacob Sobroff has that part of the story.
It was the verdict that changed America forever.
Race plays a part of everything in America.
This prosecution team didn't lose today. I deeply believe that this country lost.
Simpson's 1995 acquittal came 16 months after the murders of his ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson and her friend Ron Goldman, both found brutally stabbed to death at her townhouse in Los Angeles. Police quickly zeroed in on OJ as the only suspect. Bloodstains, hair samples, and other physical evidence linking him to the crimes.
There is now a statewide manhunt underway for O.J. Simpson in California.
That low-speed police chase of his white Bronco watched by 95 million viewers. Finally, he surrendered.
But that's exactly what we can expect.
At his trial, prosecutors Marcia Clark and Christopher Darden presented a parade of witnesses and DNA evidence, painting Simpson as a vengeful and violent spouse.
Just as she tried to break free, Orenthal James Simpson took her very life in what amounted to his final and his ultimate act of control.
Judge Lance Ito allowed cameras in court to capture every moment, leading to booming cable news ratings and the birth of true crime TV. Even The Tonight Show couldn't stay away from the spectacle with a spoof of Dancing Ito's. Over the eight-month trial, the prosecutor's case was slowly dismantled by Simpson's legal dream team, led by Johnny Cochran.
Stop this cover-up! If you don't stop it, then who?
Simpson's attorneys playing on the mostly black jury's mistrust of the police, just 3 years after the LAPD's exoneration in the Rodney King case. They cast lead investigator Mark Furman as a racist who wanted to frame Simpson, even playing recordings of him using the N-word. But perhaps the most explosive moment when Simpson struggled to fit into those gloves from the murder scene.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Darden speaking to Savannah about that moment in 2016.
You do not regret it?
Let me go on the record and say that I can't regret it. It's the past. I think that
desperate times call for desperate measures.
And when the jury did not convict Simpson, public reaction mostly split along racial lines, reflecting the deep divide in experiences with racism and police conduct. The Brown and Goldman families left heartbroken and angry.
I think women out there are really petrified. They're really terrified. You know, the justice system failed. 5 as to count 1.
Is this your verdict? 2 years after that criminal case verdict, a civil trial found Simpson liable for the deaths of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, awarding their families $33.5 million in damages, a sum the Goldman's attorney since Simpson never fully paid and has ballooned to over $100 million with interest, guys.
All right, Jacob, thank you so much.
NBC senior investigative and legal correspondent Cynthia McFadden is with us now and was with us then. As a chief legal correspondent for ABC News, we all watched you, Cynthia. What are your memories of this trial and this moment in American history?
It was an extraordinary thing to be in the center of this fulcrum because America really was watching. Remember, 95 million Americans watched that Bronco chase. It was something we shared together. It was an amazing thing. And listen, personally, I had just arrived. I'd been an anchor at Court TV. I had just arrived at ABC a couple of months before. I knew nothing about network news. I was so lucky I had so many. You know what it means to have fabulous producers who really teach you what to do. So it was an extraordinary experience. And most of the time, professional things don't come at a good time, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, at that moment, I hadn't had my child. I was single. I worked around the clock, and it was magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about that verdict, that split screen that we keep seeing was so riveting. It was that kind of defined where the country was at that moment.
It really did. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the courtroom was a sort of fulcrum of many of those third rails in America. Race, money, crime, right? They all came together. And I think that, you know, in many ways, the legacy of that trial, the context, I thought Costas was so interesting talking to you earlier, where he was so articulate and explained the context of what was taking place.
Well, you know, I mean, I think in retrospect, the basic theory of the case now is the defense dream team was dazzling. Judge Ito lost control of the courtroom and the prosecution blew it. Do you think that's right?
I think you've got it. I think that's pretty much what happened. You know, there were so many unforced errors by the prosecutors, including maybe the most basic one. They forgot that they were communicating with a group of jurors, and the defense never forgot that.
Cynthia, let's go back to that Bronco chase before moment that you talked about. So many people watching. We all remember where we were as we watched it. Your vantage point from that day.
Okay. It was Friday, and I had taken my first day off, and I was way out on Long Island visiting friends, and I got a phone call saying, you've got to come in, and you've got to come in now. And ABC sent a helicopter, and the helicopter couldn't land because it was so foggy. So they sent a second one, a former pilot in Vietnam who didn't care that it was foggy and he didn't have instruments. So I thought, I'm glad to be important enough to have them send a helicopter, and not so happy that they don't care whether it's safe or not.
Wow.
But yeah,
I mean, live to tell. But it is one of those moments that we all remember.
We do. And I must say, I totally misjudged. I did not think this would become the trial of the century.
Really?
I didn't understand well enough. And frankly, it riveted people, but I'm not sure if you really dug in that most people knew.
But you had been covering, I mean, you were an anchor on Court TV. I just told you I used to watch you. I was a young reporter at local news, younger anyway, and than now. But you were used to this gavel-to-gavel coverage, but this is when it went mainstream.
Exactly. And, you know, it did become like a thing, right? Because the camera in the courtroom really made a lot of difference.
Yes. Did you think he'd be acquitted?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people were shocked.
Yeah, I was shocked.
And the jury deliberating just a few hours after an 11-month trial.
Yeah. 4 hours, and then we all went back into court. You don't usually convict someone on 4 hours, so that gave a little tip. And the judge decided to hold the reading of the verdict until the next day.
So everyone knew when to tune in.
Exactly.
I think we have a broader understanding, though, of the context now.
Yes. And, you know, I'm a big advocate for cameras in courts. Sure. I think, you know, these are public trials. The public should have access, and yet anyone who says those cameras didn't have an effect on that trial is really not paying attention. Yeah.
Do you think he would, if something like that would happen today, Cynthia?
You know, it's such an interesting question. I hope we learn some lessons from that.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny Cochran ran that courtroom. Judge Ito I'm sorry to say, did not. Yeah. He was a magnificent lawyer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk to the youngins around here, I was downstairs this morning, what they know about that trial, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, yeah. Right? The line. All right, Cynthia. Thank you so much.
So great to be with you.
Still ahead. Major development in the betting scandal that has rocked baseball. The new charge now facing Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter and how prosecutors say he managed to steal millions from the sport's biggest star.
But first, new frustrations over sky-high fast food prices. Brian Chung on that story. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning. For those that are buying Happy Meals, a not-so-happy surprise. Prices are going up for fast food. We'll explain on the other side of the break right here on Today.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We're back 7:43 this morning on In Depth Today, a frustration facing a lot of families.
Yeah, grabbing a quick bite to eat at the drive-thru is getting more expensive.
Yeah, it is. NBC's business correspondent Brian Chung here with a closer look. Now they're coming for our fast food?
Yeah, they are. Good morning, guys. Prices are going up everywhere you look, but new data shows inflation is particularly bad in the one place where you were supposed to find reprieve, fast food.
Consumers are getting a little salty about those fast food meals.
Since when is drive-thru like a minimum of $30 for two people to eat?
New inflation data this week confirms that prices at fast food restaurants are on the rise. And consumers, well, they've taken note.
It's getting out of hand out here, bro. I'm going to have to just start eating ramen noodles like college again.
So why the price increases? In addition to pricier ingredients, labor costs have also been on the rise.
Prices are increasing at a rate that we haven't seen really in modern restaurant industry.
So much so that McDonald's has said it's noticing lower income consumers turning away from Big Macs and opting to cook at home. With food prices at fast food restaurants 5% higher than this time last year, consumers are turning to groceries where prices have risen at a slower 1.2%. In Orlando, Brooke Benson used to be a super fan of Panera Bread. For 12 years, she used to go 3 to 4 times a week. An outpost near her house showed prices at almost $9 for a bowl for the same soup that cost her about $7 3 years ago.
If I'm going to spend that $8, $9, I'd rather get like a sandwich or something that for my family and versus just me getting a bowl of soup.
Panera did not respond to requests for comment. Fast food companies operating on a franchise model insist that prices are up to their franchisees to set, which explains why prices may vary by location.
The franchisor looks at this consumer backlash and is concerned about what this means for their customer base and revenues. And I can tell you, you know, restaurant sales in the back half of last year definitely slowed down for sure.
But consumer backlash may push companies to back off of attempts to pass on costs to consumers, following the social media uproar sparked by Wendy's plans for dynamic pricing.
And $40 more at 3 a.m. We know you want it.
Wendy's later clarifying it would not use surge pricing like rideshare apps, which increase prices during high demand times. Companies like Chili's are trying to advertise meal deals for under $11, taking direct aim at competitors as consumers look for savings.
So, Brian, I mean, when it comes to these price hikes that so many folks are seeing at so many different fast food restaurants, are there any particular menu items that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, and McDonald's insists that for franchisees, they're the ones that set the pricing, but they say that their apps, no matter where you go, can oftentimes offer coupons or other types of deals. Also look at meal deals if you're buying for the whole family. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, of course, you can turn to any sort of coupons online, maybe try to plan ahead of time to see if you can get some deals at the fast food.
Okay. Cool. Fine show. Thank you.
All right. 746. Mr. Roker, how about
you? Well, guys, I got to tell you, this stuff that's been coming out of the West Coast has been really rough for us for April. Last week, we had that severe outbreak, 485 severe weather reports, tornado, wind damage. Then this week, we had that other outbreak Monday through Thursday, 371 for tornadoes, wind report, and hail. And guess what? We got another storm coming into California this week, Monday, rapidly developing as it moves into the plains. And we've got a real already out. We want to put this on your radar because we're looking at Monday for a risk. This could be a significant severe weather event from Kansas on into Oklahoma and Texas. And then the system moves to the east Tuesday. Again, another severe threat from Chicago, Peoria, St. Louis, all the way down to Shreveport. So Monday, Tuesday of early next week could be a big, big problem. And that is your latest weather. This is so good.
We're so excited. The very proud girl dad who's gone viral for his heartwarming response to people who pity him for having daughters. The whole family's here. They've got a beautiful message to share. We're going to talk to them and get your morning boost coming up right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.